Welcome to a Sober Girls Guide podcast, a lifestyle podcast based on sobriety and recovery. I'm your host and sober girl, Jessica Jabot. Inspired by my own sobriety and wellness journey, I want to spread the wealth of knowledge. Tune in each week for uncensored conversations about mental health, self-development, wellness and spirituality, and how they influence each guest's unique recovery journey. My goal is to educate and inspire and to let you know you are not alone on your recovery journey. Thanks so much for tuning in to a Sober Girls Guide podcast. Let's go! Hello, hello, and welcome to episode 255 of a Sober Girls Guide podcast. Katie from Alcohol Free in Dali is here to give us the must-have tips and tricks to booze-free vacations. From weekend getaways to wild bachelorette parties, Katie gives us the tips to prepare for the best booze-free travel. On this episode, you will learn how to have fun without the FOMO, what to drink for every occasion, and the number one mistake to avoid when traveling sober. This is such a fantastic episode. Katie really knocks us out of the park. Let's get into it. Katie, what's going on? How are you?
I'm so good. How are you?
I am really excited to talk to you today because, you know, spring break is here. Everyone's going on vacation. Everyone's planning their vacation. Summer is coming up. And we got to know what to do when we're alcohol free and we're going on vacation or we're taking these little weekend trips. You got to help a sister out here.
For sure. I can definitely help. I did Vegas sober recently for a bachelor trip. So I feel like this is very fresh on my brain.
Love that. I'm a huge fan of Vegas. Even more so sober.
100%. Yeah. 100%.
Totally. Okay. So we're going to get into it. But first of all, I want to hear about your personal story and your relationship with alcohol. And how, first of all, how do you identify? Like, what do you?
So I say I'm alcohol free or sober. I don't really stray away from the word sober. I am, if you want to use the term Cali sober, I don't really smoke or anything, but I drink drinks that have either CBD or THC. So I do use those as a part of like, helps me calm down in like a very moderate medicinal way, like every once in a while. But outside of that, no other. Anything else going on? So I use the word alcohol free just to distinguish. I know sometimes, you know, the word sober encompasses more, but interchangeably. So that's kind of how I roll.
People really get riled up about the THC and the California sober and the labels. Why do you think that is?
Yes. You know, I think the process of becoming sober, I think, is so personal and so often emotionally charged. And I think often, like, I even have friends who I know who are sober, who a part of their sobriety is like absolutely no THC, no CBD because of either programs they're a part of or the way their brain works. And I completely understand and relate. Like, I can respect that, right? So that's why I try to distinguish and say alcohol free and not just the term sober, because it has so many different meanings. But I also do try to clarify, and as I do this on my page as well, that sobriety is not one size fits all. Everyone's brain is different. Everyone's journey is different. So what works for me is not going to work for everybody else. And instead of gatekeeping and trying to say one is better than the other, I just think we're all out here doing our best. So little, even if it's a little change, if it has big impact, that's positive. So that's what I try to promote on my page. I try to be very mindful and even distinguish between 0.0, you know, ABV versus 0.5, because I understand that that is nuance that people are concerned about in this space. But also, I can't cater my page or what I talk about to one specific form of sobriety, because that doesn't exist. There's so many different types. So I think as I understand where the concern comes from. But also, that's something I'm just very upfront about on my page. I'm like, if it doesn't apply to you, please don't feel like you have to follow along. But I will be sharing all sorts of different types of opportunities and ways to live under the alcohol-free umbrella, even with some of these products that some understandably would deem as not included, being included in sobriety. Completely understand. Yeah.
Yeah. Gotcha. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think sobriety is almost like a spectrum, right?
Agreed.
And I love that you said, you know, not every substance has the same effect for every person. This is a very, very personal and therefore emotional journey that we're on. So it does elicit emotional responses.
100%. And like for me, I didn't even like, so alcohol for me caused extremely emotional responses. And I think that's like my sobriety was, I understand the emotion behind it because the reason I stopped drinking was because it would send me just truly into such crazy, I know we call them like scaries, but it was truly depressive episodes that would last days at a time. And I couldn't get myself out of them or be the person I wanted to be during those episodes. And it was debilitating, anxiety and depression. And I had already had diagnosed anxiety. And I was already on, I'm very open about this, but already on anti-anxiety and antidepressants. And of course, you're not supposed to drink on those anyway. So it was just like this weird depressive shame spiral. And that for me was the reason behind drinking. It was really a conversation with my sister where she goes, I don't want to be around you when you drink anymore. And it is crazy, like as many friends can say that or whatever, but there's something about if you have a sibling and you know, like the relationships that you can have with your sibling, like you're like, oh, they're never getting rid of me. And if they have a problem, like they give you chance after chance or like, they're never going to stop loving you. But if they're like, I don't want to be around you when you're like this, like that kind of, you're like, that was the final straw for me. After my sister was like, I don't want to be like, we should never be drinking together ever again. Like, I don't want to be around you when you're doing this. And to her credit, she's always been very blunt. Like, I got to give her a shout out. Like, she's never shied away from telling me the truth, but it was taking a huge toll like on our sisterly relationship. And we have a very fruitful, like loving, wonderful relationship. And so that was enough for me to be like, nah, I gotta stop. So, because truly I was such, very tough to be around. And probably very like scary to be like, what is she going to do when she's feeling this way? And I had to stop putting my friends and family through that.
Can you give me an example of what that looked like?
Sure. Like kind of like when I would feel that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I would say this, and it started happening to me, in my mid 20s. I didn't ever really consider myself to have like an unhealthy relationship with alcohol until my mid 20s. So I drank a lot in college, had like the typical fun fraternity sorority, like partier. And I never really had those responses. But then I think it was a mixture of in my mid 20s being on a new medication for my depression and anxiety and watching other people around me make probably not great decisions around alcohol. It kind of almost gave me like this weird anxiety PTSD response because I had watched someone very close to me have trouble with alcohol and they kind of hit a rock bottom. And I think I just like really absorbed that and it freaked me out. So what would happen was I could even have everything from like a ton of like wine and beer to it got to the point where it was even just one. And the next day I'd wake up, would question, firstly, of course, everything I had done the night before. Like I would say to myself, what excuse did I give people to hate me? Which is a terrible mindset to be in. Like you're second guessing everything you did. And you're like, what did I do under the influence that gives people a reason to be terrible to me? And then therefore I would have to accept people being terrible to me. And that was probably reflective of like some of the friendships I had at the time too, which is nuanced. But so it would start out by like, what did I do last night? What did I say? Did I say something wrong? Nitpicking and questioning everything I had done the night before. And then it would be hiding under the covers, like not wanting to get out of bed. I was in grad school at the time. So then I would drag myself out of bed and be miserable, being like, why did I wait to do my homework until Sunday night? I have to get up for work in the morning. And it would then bleed into like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. I would feel behind. I would feel depressed. I would read over text messages from my friends sent me and saying like finding reasons for to be like, oh, they said this and that means they're mad at me. This means my significant other's mad at me. And just essentially I'd become like a hermit for 3 days. I wouldn't go anywhere. I wouldn't do anything. And I would be kind of like a shell. And it was like my brain like being like, you did something wrong. What did you do for days on end until eventually I realized everything was okay and it kind of petered out. And then it would start again the next weekend. And that's no way to live. That's just like when you're waiting for someone to treat you terribly because of something you think you did, that really gives people license to treat you terribly because you think you deserve it or did something to deserve it. Right. That causes self-esteem issues, is very insecure at the time. I also like wasn't moving my body. I didn't exercise. So it was just like a very, I look back on that time. That was around the time I started to consider cutting back, and it was a very sad time. Like it was, it has a haze over that time. So it was really not fun.
Yeah. I mean, waking up like that and having that 3-day kind of, almost doom spiral,
literally. Oh, yeah. That's what it felt like.
It's the worst.
Oh, there's no feeling like it. It's awful.
Yeah. And I totally understand that feeling of like, okay, well, like, they're probably never going to talk to me, or I totally deserve to be spoken to like this or treated like this because like I'm also a bad person too. So
exactly.
But you're not a bad person. Mm-hmm. You're not.
You just feel like
maybe your choices weren't ideal.
It's a nice way to put it.
Yeah. But you're not like, I don't really think anyone is a bad person.
Mm-mm. Consciously. No, yeah. And it was a collection of just like, bad choices. Like,
yeah,
my alcohol use was definitely at the time. Like I was drinking a lot. And I think I was just like, I didn't like my life at the time. I look back at the time I was, you know, I didn't like my job at the time. I didn't like being in grad. I was in grad school and working full time and in the middle of COVID. That I don't, it was a lot. And, I was, you know, could have made better friendship decisions at the time. So it was just, I remember sitting down with my mom. This was probably 2 or 3 months before I gave up alcohol in its totality, when I had that conversation with my sister. And I remember I sat down with my mom, and this still sticks with me a lot. And I said, Mom, I built the puzzle pieces together of what my life looks like. I finished the puzzle and I don't like the picture at all. So I felt like I literally, and it was giving up alcohol that kind of like, you know, you drop a puzzle and it shatters into 1,000 pieces and you have to rebuild it. Mm-hmm. Like I had to do that. Like I literally had to undo so many things, friendships, relationships, alcohol use, and literally rebuild the puzzle. And that was like a profound metaphor for me of like, I spent all so many years like trying to put these puzzle pieces of friendships and relationships and job and work and how I spend my free time and hobbies. And I built this picture and I don't like any of it. And now I have to undo it all. And alcohol played a big role in that. I think of like not liking the picture that stared back at me. And when I stopped drinking, it was a period of like, I was really reevaluating a lot of my friendships, my relationship at the time. I'm no longer with that person, but literally it was like all at once an undoing of like everything I knew so that years later I could finally be like, I like this picture that's staring back at me. So that was really impactful at the time. Like it was not a fun time. But looking back on it years later, I can be like, I really am glad I put in that work because it's paying off now.
Yeah.
Anyway, absolutely. That was really emo, but it's true.
No, I love it. I love everyone's story is so different and so unique.
For
and
sure.
How they come to changing their relationship with alcohol is really important. And I have a question. When you were like undoing this puzzle, did you feel like it was a lot of unlearning in a sense?
I think for me, I wouldn't say unlearning. I felt like I had no control. So I had to be, like I felt like a lot of like my relationship ended very suddenly. I felt like I wasn't in control of that. A lot of my friendships dissolved very quickly. I felt like I wasn't in control of that. I decided to give up alcohol, but it was kind of like, oh, my sister told me this thing. So I wasn't necessarily in control of that. So I felt like things were happening to me and I didn't have any agency over what was happening to me. And I think that was actually a blessing because I don't know, like looking back, I'm like, oh, I had to have no control because if I did, I wouldn't have changed anything. And so I had to get really comfortable with just trusting that it would work out. And it took like from the time I stopped drinking, and all those kind of things happened. It took a year or two of building. I've been alcohol free for over 2.5 years. And it took really a full year for me to trust that I was like, okay, like I'm starting to see the payoff from those situations and just having to like tough it out and work through it and keep going.
Yeah.
So yes, for me, like it was, you know, for me, it definitely was, that was the main feeling. I feel like I didn't have any agency over my own life at the time, but now knowing what I know, if I did have any control, I wouldn't have changed those habits. So it kind of had to be one of those situations where like drastic changes had to happen around me for me to make any change. So it ended up working out. But that was the overall feeling for me. It was like, I just don't feel like I'm in control, but it had to be some sort of like divine intervention or whatever, spiritual intervention, whatever you believe in, saying like, we got to shake up her life or she's just not going to make any changes. So it worked out.
It kind of sounds like the puzzle broke apart, but also the pieces or making up the puzzle shifted as well.
100%.
Like completely. Like,
my friendships, my relationships, my everything looks different now for the better. Mm-hmm. My job's different. I'm no longer in grad school. Like, so my work is different. My friends are different. Like some of them, of course, are the same, but a lot of them are different. And, you know, I'm no longer dating the person I was at the time. So all of these things that I was holding on to really tight, like were no longer, you know? And so, yeah, for sure. It looks completely different. It's not an absolute 180. And it's definitely for the better. There's a calmness. Mm-hmm. I always say with being alcohol free, it's like the highs are just as high, but the lows aren't nearly as low.
Oof.
For sure.
For a good reason.
Oh, 100%. Like, yeah.
So much better. So much 100%. More sustainable too.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I think that's one of the things, like when we stop drinking, it's like, well, I'm never going to feel.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're going to feel like just in an adequate way, not in a synthetic
for
driven
sure.
way.
I call it the first sip feeling. And that's what you miss. You miss the first sip feeling, which is the first sip of wine, the first sip of beer, the first sip of your drink, and like that immediate endorphin rush. But that's the best you're going to feel. And after that, then it goes down. And something I talk about on my page, especially when it comes to travel or going on trips or going to parties or going to events, is if you can be comfortable with knowing you're like the feeling of FOMO, it's so simple, but knowing being like, I'm not going to probably feel that first sip feeling. I'm probably not going to feel that like euphoric kind of whatever. But if you get really comfortable with that and prepare for that and say, hey, I'm probably going to like feel either A, a little left out or B, like, have a little FOMO, like people are doing shots. You know, you probably will feel that way, and don't ignore it. Accept it, work through it, be prepared for it. Because let's get real, like you will feel a little FOMO. You will feel a little left out. You will feel like, oh, I might not have had as fun as I did on it. But the payoff the next day is so worth it. And so I'm like, live in that feeling and get comfortable with it and know it's coming. Like, let's be realistic. And I do talk a lot about that as just like being real and say, yeah, I'm probably going to feel a little left out. It's probably like, yeah, if I was drunk, I might have felt like it was more fun. But the long term is so much more fruitful.
But you're also just fitting in when you're drinking. Mm-hmm. You're not necessarily belonging.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
That's a very different energy
100%.
Level. Fitting in is lower.
So something... This stuck with me when I heard it. So I was very fortunate to go to a dinner in Austin. I'm in Dallas, but I went to a dinner in Austin with the founder of Seedlip, which I was very excited to be invited. He's awesome. If you haven't tried Seedlip, they're fantastic. They do a great job. We were talking about sobriety and all of those fun things that people do when they're at a non-alcoholic spirit dinner. Right. And he said, you know, we were talking about being at a dinner. Full a dinner party completely sober. No one's under the influence of anything. Mm-hmm. And he goes, you know, when we all walked in, we were all not drinking. So the first 20 minutes of this event might have been a little bit more awkward than it would have if we all were drinking. However, after this evening, I will hug all of you goodbye. And I didn't know all of you when you got here. And that's what being in a alcohol-free space does. Like, you're able to build relationships in a way that you're like, okay, I really sat down and I talked to you, And after these 3 hours, I didn't know you when I walked in, but I'm going to be able to hug you goodbye. Mm. Right. Because I know you now. And you know, you're not going to hug everybody goodbye, you know, but in life, but
you're going to know who you want to hug, right?
You're going to know. Yeah. Like you don't feel like you need to hug everybody goodbye, but in a situation like that, where you sit down and you're intentional and your goal is to get to know somebody and to learn about them.
Yeah.
You really can. And he did. He hugged everybody goodbye. And that really sat with me too. It's like, okay, like we all were very intentionally here to discuss and learn and chat and get to know one another. And we couldn't have done that at this level if alcohol was present. And because alcohol wasn't present, we were given that gift of we all hugged each other goodbye. And that really stuck with me in the way that he said it. I think love that. Was great. Yeah.
That is really so nice. Cool.
Mm-hmm.
And I love, it also is, it's a slow burn, right? Like, the first 20 minutes, you're not going to come out the gate hugging everyone and, you know, getting to know everyone. That's normal.
That is normal.
Doing that, being drunk and doing that is not so normal.
Exactly. No, you're like, let me buy you a drink. Let's sit down. Let's like tell me everything in 20 minutes. It's very like, you can skip a lot of steps, but usually like, I don't know. I'm just thinking back and it's like, you know, it's like that drunk girl in the bathroom, your best friends, but then you don't remember their name. Right? Your best friends in the bathroom, but you're like, I have no idea who that is. Which also, that's a lovely thing. Help your friends in the bathroom. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
but it serves a purpose. Exactly. All these interactions serve a purpose.
100%.
And I think to what you're describing is I love how you're thinking about being prepared, right? And going into these situations and being aware of like, okay, what kind of relationships am I looking to build? Like, do I want maybe just like the hype girl bathroom thing? Cool. Right. Or do I want to actually meet someone at this event or at this party who like I want to connect with and maybe potentially be a friend? That's up to you.
Dating sober was really exciting. So, exciting is a good word for it, but it was funny. You knew immediately like whether or not you liked that person.
100%.
Like, there was no need for 3-4 days to decide, ooh, do I like this person or not? I knew after the first, I would always try and give it a second date just to be nice, just like to be like, okay, like really, let's give this person a second chance. But like 2 dates, you picked up on so many things, not drinking and going on dates, but also
so many red flags. They are
so many,
bright,
so many red flags,
neon red.
and when you're drinking and dating, you have a tendency, like I did so many of these when I was dating, when I was drinking, it was like you end up on the marathon date. You end up on the date that is 7 hours long and so intense and like so many steps in 7 hours, like the marathon date that happened when you're both drinking, the marathon date more than likely will happen. And that's like way too much, way too fast. You don't do that. That's what lesbians you're sober.
Do. That's what all lesbians do. I can speak to that. Yeah. And then you move in like the second week and then you're like, oh, actually, I don't actually like you as a person, but we're stuck and we're probably going to be together for 5 more years. That's just what we do. Anyways, sorry, go on.
No, I was just going to say, I can't speak from personal experience in that, but yes, the too much too soon. But I mean, I'm guilty of that too, where you're like, oh my gosh, like I'm dating this person after 2 weeks and we said, I love you after 3 weeks. And it's like alcohol induced all of those things. Right. And so you don't do that when you're stone cold sober and you're like, I've known this person for 3 weeks. I don't know if I love them at all. Like, I don't even know if I like them yet. So it's like intentional.
Don't even know them yet.
Yes. Like I've literally seen them 5 times. So, it's funny. It's a funny experience. Like doing that sober. Like I always, would talk about that dating was like a completely different experience sober than when alcohol was present. It's funny. It was funny.
Oh, it's a trip. It's a trip all on its own. Yeah. It's great. It's so much more easier, I think. I personally think it's easier. What about you?
I think so. Well, I have an awesome boyfriend now, so I don't have to worry about that. Nice. But, you know, he drinks. But it was funny. Like, I felt like I was way more level-headed even going into the relationship and being able to communicate like, this is what I need. This is not what I need. This is what I'm looking for. This is not. So like we were on the same page from day one. I've never been in a relationship like that. And so I just think it helped me like understand what I was getting myself into and like, am I seeing what I need to see out of this person to take steps forward? Ooh, and for
I like yeah, that.
It was really nice. And you know, people a lot of times ask me like what it's like dating someone who does drink. And that was like a conversation we had early on. I really let him know what made me, what was comfortable for me and uncomfortable for me. And he does a great job of respecting that. I have some friends who are sober and they're like, no alcohol in the house. Like, that's the boundary. For me, it doesn't matter to me. Like, he'll drink a high noon while he's gaming with his guy friends. But for me, a huge boundary is like, I will not see you like blacked out. I will leave. Like, I will immediately leave. That gives me so much anxiety. And like, I'm like, do whatever you want with your friends. Like, but I will not be there. And so like, there's certain boundaries of like, if you get to a certain level, that's your choice. I will not be there. And so he's super aware of that and super respectful of that. And like, you know, so you just talk through those things. And for some people who are sober, they have to have a sober partner, and that also works. So again, kind of what we're talking to a little bit ago, it's like really is different for everybody.
Yeah. And I think setting those boundaries are so important, because even you saying that, if I were to see my partner like blackout, that would be such an ick for me.
Yeah.
And that relationship would probably not bounce back. So like, you're doing everyone a favor by setting those 100%. Boundaries.
Yeah. And I'm like, if you're on a trip with your guy friends, like he went on a trip with his guy friends, I'm like, do whatever you want. Like, do whatever. But like, if you're here with me, I will literally get in the car and leave. I drive everywhere because, you know, I don't drink. And I was like, I will leave you at the bar, like wherever we are. I will leave you. I will be going home because I will not do that. And he knows I'm super serious. So.
Totally. I love that. I love that you put that down.
Yeah.
Boundaries are key.
Yeah, boundaries. 100%.
So talk to me about sober traveling and what tips can you give us for going away, either a weekend getaway or like family vacation or vacation with the girls?
Yeah.
Help a sister out.
100%. I got you. So I'm at the phase of my life where like a lot of my friends are getting married. So I've been on a lot of sober bachelorette trips, a lot of like, I've been sober to weddings, bachelorette trips. I recently just like, we went on a family vacation to Europe. Like, I've been fortunate to be a lot of places as a sober person. And there's a couple of things that really help me. And it does depend often, like there's limitations to every trip, right? So like, if you're going to Europe for a week, like there's only so much you can pack and bring along with you. But however, if you're driving somewhere, like I do like a pack my alcohol-free cooler, like whenever I go to Austin, whenever I go to Houston, I pack that bad boy up. Like I grab my cooler, I grab what I want for the weekend, and I just bring it along with me because that is, you know, I'm driving. I can bring as much as I want. So I think that number one, like bring something along. Don't be afraid to bring something along. So for example, like I went on a bachelorette trip to Las Vegas in January. It was a blast. I knew that we would be, you know, celebrating in the hotel before we would go out to eat. So I brought along two bottles of non-alcoholic wine and champagne. Like, so I could bring it along and have it with me. Now the bride was wonderful and also asked if she could buy any for me. So she brought some along too. Super wonderful. But I think like, you know, you can't rely on other people to do it for you. You got to be in charge of your own destiny. And I think something I always tell people is like, I don't expect anyone to change their behavior to cater to my needs within reason, right? Like as long as they're being a respectful human being. But I don't expect anyone to provide anything for me, change their plans, change where we eat, change where we go to cater to my needs. It is my job to handle myself. So be prepared.
Right.
Bring what you need to along so you can have options. Now, of course, you cannot bring certain things along with you if you're flying sometimes, or if you're going to restaurants, or if you're going to bars. You can't bring things with you. So I always say, first and foremost, have your backups. So have your, okay, if I have no idea what to order, if there's no alcohol-free options, if there's nothing, what am I going to order? And I think there's a couple of really simple backups that every bar, no matter what bartender or restaurant, should have and be able to provide. As simple as a sparkling water with a lime, a Shirley Temple, a Red Bull. Like have your baseline and say, I know what I'm going to be able to order no matter where I go. And even if they don't have a bartender, I can have something to drink that I like in my hand. I have friends that bring along like Crystal Light packets and Mio and all that good stuff like with them so they can concoct something. Yeah. So like you can like just stick a Mio in your pocket. Like they have so many flavors now, like Starburst and all that good stuff. Like
wait,
so many
have
crazy.
Have you tried Brella?
No, I've never heard of it actually.
Oh my God. They are so good. They're literally mocktails in like the Mio little like, in, like a little squirts.
Okay. Yeah. Do that.
They are so good.
Yes. I brought along. Incredible. So I went on a bachelorette trip last year to Cabo and I brought the recess packets, like the little recess drinks. Perfect. So bring that along. But then also spend 5-10 minutes before you go to specific restaurants on trips. Look up the menu, see what they have. Like depending upon the level of restaurant, like if it's a nice restaurant, you know, there's going to be a bartender that's going to be able to make you something awesome. So you can ask them for like a request or a bartender's choice of like a, you know, non-alcoholic drink that they want to prepare. But I would say have your baseline because you will be able to do that wherever. And then when it comes to traveling, particularly with like a bachelorette party, sometimes at work, you know, if there's a lot of work happy hours and going on, I travel a lot for work. Mm-hmm. You got to be comfortable knowing when to say it's time for me to go home. And that's something you have to be comfortable with. Yes. Mm-hmm. Because that is going to be the thing that like will get you is being comfortable. And that kind of goes back to the like being uncomfortable with the feeling of FOMO. Like when I was at in Vegas, like I stayed out pretty late. I had a blast. But like when a certain time ran like rolled around and I was looking around and I was like, I don't think number one, I'm tired, but number two, like we've reached a level that I just don't find particularly fun for me anymore. I'm going to go. And you have to be comfortable and confident enough to be like, I can leave and I need to leave when I need to leave. And you need to be responsible. Like the individual, I believe, this is my opinion, needs to be responsible for communicating that prior to the event. So I had a conversation with, just so you're like not like, so you're on the same page. I would hate for a friend of mine, like at their bridal bachelorette to think that I just left. Right. So like for these bachelorette parties, I was just like, hey, I know me. We know each other. We're good friends. Obviously, I'm on your bachelorette trip. Just know that if we hit a point of no return, if I need to leave, that's why. I will not tell you. I don't want it to affect your night. I don't want it to affect your time. Do not change your plans for me. No one will be leaving with me, but I need to take care of myself. And fortunately, like all my friends are very aware. And and by the time I left both of these functions, one for Cabo, one for Vegas, like most of us were leaving anyway. So it worked out. But I just think like, I think the overarching theme is like, no one's going to do it for you. You can't, and it's not anyone else's responsibility to make you comfortable. You got to own it. So whether it's owning what you bring along with you, owning being prepared to make educated like decisions with a menu or how to order what you want. It takes practice, you know how to say, I need to leave. But essentially, like you kind of just got to be like in charge of your own destiny. And it's some of those take practice. Some of those take like, you know, getting comfortable. Absolutely. But you got to put the onus on yourself because you cannot say, well, everyone else needs to change the behavior to help me. Absolutely not. Like I'm a big proponent of that. I've always said like, I'm in charge of making this situation okay for me. Of course, within reason. Like if anyone's being an asshole, that's an exception. But I'm like, it's not anybody else's job to cater to my needs. Like I have to be prepared to handle this on my own. So that means being really realistic about what possible obstacles are going to be in your way.
Yeah. And let's be real, like bachelorette parties, we know what goes down bachelorette parties, right?
And if it's going to be too much, if it's going to be, and that's the thing. I'm like, if it's going to be too much, you can say no. You do not have to go. You have to make that decision for yourself. Like you have to know. But I will say the first one's the hardest. Once you get over that first one, it gets easier. Like the first bachelorette trip I went on was like a month into my sobriety. And it was hard. It was hard for me. I know. It was in LA. It was hard for me. I was still navigating everything. I didn't know how long I was going to do this sober thing. I hadn't, like, I was like committed, but not like forever. I was like, this is short term, but it was tough. And like my friend didn't understand it either. I hadn't fully like talked to her about what was going on with me. So it was tough. It was like tough on me. It was tough on, I think, her because she was used to me behaving one way and I was acting very differently. Right. And so, yeah, it wasn't the most fun. I probably wasn't having the most fun, and I probably wasn't the most fun version of myself because it was so early on. But sure. I got over the hump and I was like, everything since then has been so much easier. So that first event, like that first one is the hardest. Getting through that first one, you're like, I know how to handle this now, or like at least much better. So that first trip is probably going to be the hardest. But then once you get through it, the other ones become a lot more easy.
But that's also like anything, doing anything 100%. For the first time. We all suck at doing things for the first time.
For sure.
That's just the nature of learning and learning about yourself. So like go out there and suck. It's okay.
Try it.
Yeah.
Like, and also like 99 times out of 100, no one's going to care that you're not drinking. Like truly. Like as long as you're not like making it everybody's issue.
True.
No one even notices if you're holding your like little soda water.
Yeah.
I literally, within the first 3 weeks of sobriety, I hadn't told a lot of people. I was at a party, like a dinner party, and I had a Topo Chico in my hand with a lime. And people were putting tequila in their Topo Chicos and lime. I just had a Topo Chico. And I had a friend that goes, oh, I want what Katie's having. She thought there was alcohol in it. She had no idea. I didn't correct her. I just kept drinking my Topo Chico. No one knew. They're like, I'll have one of those, what Katie's having. Had no idea. Like literally no idea.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I mean, I also until like you're ready and like right with yourself, you also don't owe anyone an explanation or, you know, to even like go into that right now.
Mm-mm. Yeah. Like I was like, I'm not ready to discuss this. So I just played along with it. I just was like, yeah, that's what she's having. Like I didn't need to tell anyone, you know?
I love that. You're so stealth. She's under the radar.
Yeah. You know, it's like, this doesn't have alcohol, but okay. So, but those I would say are my main three things. Like those are my main three things. Like,
and how do you know, like, what is your personal like telltale sign when it is like ready to go, when you are ready to take your sober girl self out of the party?
The moment I'm having like that, it's not fun. Like literally the moment it's not fun. If I'm like, I'm not having fun anymore, I'm ready, I'm out. Like, it's like with anything in life, I think like when you're like, ooh, this is more stressful than it is fun. Mm-hmm. And that can be like a lot of different things. Like, that's when you start to evaluate. It can be everything from like hobbies to, like people ask me, they're like, how long do you think you'll do like the TikTok and Instagram thing about alcohol free? And I said, as long as it stays more fun than stressful, that's how long I will do it. But when it's 49% fun and 51% more stressful, I'm going to have to reevaluate. And that's how I used to coach indoor cycling. And that was a conversation I had to have with myself. I said, it's more stressful for me now than it is fun anymore. And now I have to reevaluate. And so that's kind of how I think about it. It's like when it becomes more stressful than fun, you got to reconsider like what's going on. And that's like a good lesson I've been trying to implement with anything in life. Now, obviously your job is going to be more stressful than it is fun. So within
sometimes,
reason,
yeah.
You know, but like, but if it's like always more stressful than it is fun and it's taking a toll on you, you got to reevaluate. Right. So,
that's also built to be stressed out all the time.
Right.
I know there's like this super misconception that like in order hustle to get culture. Anywhere, you have to be like super stressed and working all the time. Ooh, hate to tell you that shit's not true.
Oh yeah.
Our bodies actually physically cannot handle it.
100%.
Yeah.
Or also if anyone's making you uncomfortable, leave. You don't own it. Like that's the other thing too. Like if someone's making you uncomfortable, you have the ability to take yourself out of that situation.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have nothing to prove. Don't feel that you have to stay in that club to be cool or to prove anything.
Yeah. Like we had a on the bachelorette trip we were on, there's a friend of mine who was trying to, she had been on some like steroids for like being sick, like some medication, and she was trying not to drink and she was really stressed out about going and not drinking. So we were talking about it. And I was like, hey, my friend, like if you don't want to go at all to like, if you want to go to dinner and you don't want to go to Omnia nightclub, you do not have to. And so we had that conversation. I'm like, if you want to do everything during the day and then skip the late night, like you are in your ability to do that. Like, and like the bride was like, yeah, it's totally fine. And there were girls, just because, you know, one was pregnant, one, whatever, they didn't go. So it's like, you know, we all have reasons that we don't want to do things. And right. So it, you know, why, like, you can give yourself the same grace that you would someone who's like, I'm pregnant, I'm not going. No one will question that. So you can give yourself the same grace of like, I'm not drinking. For me, that's the choice to not go.
Right.
As long as you're just like, you know, again, not making it the whole group's responsibility to help you decide and making it a thing, you know? So,
yeah, I love that. Yeah. I love that hack though. Like, yeah, do the daytime stuff and maybe pass on the nighttime stuff. Like,
yeah, I do that all the time.
Quality over quantity, right?
I'm the queen of the 8 p.m. exit, like, or the nightfall exit. Like, I literally will do all the fun things during the day. Like, in Dallas, we'll go on Lower Greenville. I'll be out for lunch, brunch. We'll walk around. And the moment it starts getting dark and then and people want to go out, I say, I'm good. I'm going to go sit in my bed and watch cult documentaries because that is what I want to do. And people just know. They're like, she'll be there half the time and then she'll make her exit. I do that a lot, which is like I always let people know, like, I'll definitely be there during the day. Unsure how long I'll stay, but I will be there. And because I made the commitment and I'll show up, but I'm like, I might be one of the first to leave, but I will absolutely be there.
Yeah.
So, I love that. You can split it up.
That's just you, right? Like that's just what your capabilities are. Mm-hmm. You know, it's also like, we can't expect these things from people who just don't have the capacity or want to do the same things that we want to do. And that's okay.
For sure. I am like, you know, and it's funny. It's just like, I feel like people put a lot of pressure on themselves around alcohol to like, I think you can definitely still go out. I go out of the time and don't drink. Mm-hmm. But I can only do that because I leave when I want to leave. Right. Mm-hmm. Like I only enjoy going in the first place because I'm leaving when I don't want to be there anymore. And I feel like a lot of times, especially in the age of like going to bachelorette parties or weddings or, you know, celebrations, there's a lot of pressure to stay the entire time or like burn the midnight oil.
Yeah.
And the only reason in my sobriety that I still love going out in the first place and being social is because I don't put the pressure on myself to stay the entire time. I think if I was putting pressure on myself to stay the entire time, I would resent those people. Like I would resent my friends. And so I think it's been very helpful for me. Like in Cabo, I left, you know, Bagatelle a little early, but I was still out late. You know, in Las Vegas, 1 a.m., 2 a.m. rolled around at Omni. I was like, I gotta go. Like, and I think the staying, even if my friends weren't like, my friends never said, oh, you need to stay. But if I stayed until they left, I would resent them. And so you also, like, I'd be like, well, I resent you making me stay. So it's helped my relationships and friendships by, like, sticking to my guns and sticking to my boundaries. I'm like, this is making me not resent other people around me because I'm making choices for myself.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think putting those boundaries in place when it comes to trips, travel, going out, doing fun things of, like, I need to leave when I need to leave, just helps you foster better relationships with your friends. I've just seen that recently. I hope I explained that eloquently, but it's helped me have better friendships too, because I'm not resenting that person for making me stay.
Well, you can also really tell when someone doesn't want to be there. They are not the funnest person to be around.
Oh my gosh, and no. I especially literally turn me. Into a pumpkin. Yeah.
Oh, I turn into I make it everybody's a pumpkin. Nightmare. Yeah.
Totally. Yeah. Sometimes
I don't want to be around
like,
me.
Stay. Oh my God, me too. And I literally sometimes my boyfriend be like, stay, because he just like likes me to be around. And I'm like, no, I'm going home. And I literally turn into a little grumpy. He's like, okay, you can go home. I'm like, thanks, bye. But I was like, I will make you miserable if you make me stay here with you.
100%. Yeah.
So
I am the grumpiest person and I make it a personal like goal to make everyone else's night
we are the horrible. Same.
And like,
yeah.
Oh, if I'm grumpy,
I'm like, you
so
want me to
you.
Go.
Yeah.
Yeah. You
just
want
let me
to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, did that help answer your question just about tackling trips
and
things?
That was fantastic. That was so good. Great.
I'm glad.
What are you on? Speaking of, like, we talked a lot about non-alcoholic drinks. What are your kind of top go-tos right now?
Ooh, oh my gosh. There's so, okay, I will say there's so many great options out there and so many companies really breaking into the space and doing really neat things. I would say, let's see, what are some of my favorites? I think, you know, I was a big beer girl. So, you know, you got to love Athletic Brewing. I mean, they just do such a fantastic job. I also love one of the first non-alcoholic drinks I had in my sobriety was like the Recess Mood. And they just have a really nice array of options, really usually easy to find. They even have a tracker, I believe, on their website where you can find where they retail in your city. So that's really nice. I also love, this is for those who are cannabis hemp friendly. There's a new company in Dallas. They're actually located in Dallas, which when I started tasting them, I didn't even know they were here. But I think they are fantastic. It is called Cali Sober. They market as a non-alcoholic cocktail, so a mocktail. It's in a can, but it has 5 milligrams of THC. And whenever I talk about them on my page and everything, I always am like, this, you know, this does have something else in it, so be aware.
Sure.
But it is a fantastic option, delicious, and I really love what they're doing. They're really, going to be a huge deal in a couple of years, and they just got started. And it's probably one of the best THC or CBD drinks I've had, and I've tried a lot. So,
nice.
Yeah, they are fantastic. I cannot sing their praises enough. I'm obsessed with their marketing too. It's like so like Cali bro, like very unique kind of hipstery cool, like you know what I mean? So I think it's a cool branding too.
I mean Cali Sober, the name kind of says it all.
Speaks for itself.
Yeah. That's great.
So they're great. So those are three that I think those were like my three staples.
Okay.
In life. I've gotten into Curious Elixirs recently. I'm just a fan of the canned. I am so low maintenance and so lazy when it comes to making things. I'm like, give it to me in a can. I mean, I really appreciate like C-Lip and there are so many fantastic, like Drink Monday and Ritual Zero Proof, movers and shakers who are like truly mixologists and brilliant people, like making really wonderful craft non-alcoholic cocktails. I'm not a mixologist. So give it to me in a can. If there's a mixologist around, I'm going to drink it. But give it to me in a can. I am so low maintenance. I am so like the laziest. I'm like, I just want to drink it. Oh, my other favorite right now, I'm obsessed. So for those who still really want to have a nice glass of champagne, I always butcher the name because it's French and I have a Texas accent when I say it. Liars. I think it's like Lyris, but it's L-Y-R-E-S. Okay, perfect. Liars. Yeah. I always say it with my Texas accent.
Yeah.
I just think it's so good. I love
Classico, right?
They're Classico. They have it in a bottle and in a can. Fantastic.
Amazing.
Their non-alcoholic gin and tonic and their spin on the Amalfi Spritz. I just think they've won so many awards and you can tell why. I mean, it is just like such high quality that they have. I would really say those are some of the standouts to me. And I think also just those probably are my go-tos because every single one of those are so different. Like you have your beer, you have your like functional beverage, you have like your mocktail, you have your champagne. So
a little bit of everything.
Provide a little bit of everything.
Katie, where can we find you on the World Wide Web?
Oh my gosh. Yes. So you can find me on TikTok and Instagram at Alcohol Free in Dally. So that is Dally is Dallas. So D-A-L-L-Y. Just a play on words there. But very active on both. If you have questions, DM me. And then if you're in Dallas, I do pop-ups probably once a month or so at local fitness studios. Really love the intersection of fitness and sobriety. And you can try all sorts of fun drinks. We've got one coming up at Session Pilates, Carrie's Pilates in April, and Barry's in May. But there'll be more throughout the year. So if you're ever around, come find me.
I love that. That's so cool. Yeah. I got to make a trip up to Dallas.
Oh, yeah. I'll show you around.
I'm in Austin, so I'm just
oh my gosh.
A little ways away, kind of.
Okay, you have such a good – I'm so jealous of everyone in Austin. You have such awesome people there, like creators there, like Dear Dry Drinkery is there, Sober and Funky is there. Like there's so many awesome people in Austin. So I'm jealous of y'all. You're a little bit ahead of Dallas in this space. So
well, you're catching them up. You're bringing Dallas into the 21st century? What's that? I don't even know what
century what we're in.
Yeah. I love that. Well, Katie, thank you so much for your time and to share your experience with us. It's been so awesome.
Yeah, I've loved this chat. And thank you for all that you do as well on your page. You're making big impact. So appreciate you having me.
One last note before you go. It is important to remember that everyone's journey and experience in changing their relationship with alcohol is different. However, one thing that remains consistent is the need for support. Head to asobergirlsguide.com. We have tips and tricks at any stage of your booze-free journey. With live coaching calls, homework and exercises to implement into your daily routine, our Sober Girls Guide group coaching will give you the accountability, structure, foundation, community, and support to change your relationship with alcohol and never look back. Head to asobergirlsguide.com now. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.